Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast from the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. And there you'll see the icon. You can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read or download later times or share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time, from African language classes to classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. A little bit late tonight. It's 8:14 here in the city of Philadelphia on May 15th. 8:15 in the evening here in Philadelphia, and it's Freestyle Friday mode here on the Time for an Awakening radio program. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And again, it's 8:18 here in the city of Philadelphia on a Friday evening. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard?
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You know, the temperature is moving in the realm that a real human being should be experiencing. I showed some courage today and ran away from the plantation. yeah, things is doing good.
Yeah.
And that's when you're locked in. You know, you're locked in, you run away, and then you run back, right? Lord, the time we live in.
Yeah, well, I know that you felt right at home there. I think it went up to 80-something degrees today.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's something. But, all things moving along, and I hope those who are dealing with, having to deal more personally with Rona, I hope, give them all their wishes while they work through this here, if there's them or the family members are dealing with it, because I still hear people that in spite of, the temperature change, there's some conditions that are still affecting us. But it also, Elliot, I have to put in there, this time shows more than ever, where Kwame Ture was right. among others, where organize must be the battle cry, because just the little bit I get, man, them people up there in D.C. is crazy.
You see the chaos that's going on in this society and with this system, period. It's chaos, just like you said, you know, when you use the term the craziness going on. But it just tells us what we need to do. It's telling us, it's screaming to us what we have to do as a people. And I'm not talking about buying into that rhetoric that they show on the television. You see all these commercials with Hollywood stars or news personalities or whatever saying we're all in this together. Mm. I mean, that's a slogan. Anybody with common sense can see that that's not true. It's certain things that we have to do. You know, I was, and it's Freestyle Friday, so anybody can get in and kick around any subject. I got a couple I want to throw out there. But one of the ones that I noticed today, Richard, here in Philadelphia, they've been, well, in every city, the schools are closed. Mm. And they were talking about, they were putting out statistics of children that are participating in online classes in public schools here in Philly. And they said that 48% of the high school students are participating in online classes. And it's lower than that. I think it was 30-something percent, 35% from K to 8. That was participating, even lower in the lower grades. We can see clearly that our children are being miseducated in these schools. They're not getting the proper education, and it's showing. When we had Marcus Klein on, and he's talking about the prison statistics and how they base beds that they're going to need in these new prisons that they're building. They're basing it off of fourth grade or third grade reading levels, mm-hmm. in public schools. And you know the litmus test or the guinea pig, so to speak, is young our black children, boys and girls. If that's the case, from these statistics that they just put out here in Philadelphia, where 48% of the high school students in public schools and the majority of public school high school students in this city is black, 48% of them are participating online. And less than that in the lower grades, Richard, we have to do something to help our children. Just like that, the closing song that we play by Gil Scott-Heron at the end of every program, we got to do something to save the children. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not being educated and we're not, some people are not capable of doing it at home. It's been showing that they don't have internet access. They don't have laptops. They don't have these things at home. So if they're not being educated at home, what do? We just sit and wait for these political administrations, be it Democrat or Republican, to help us, or do we do it ourselves? We have the mechanisms to do this ourselves. When our people transitioned out of chattel enslavement to moving around somewhat freely in society, we used the church organizations, church buildings, and some social organizations to educate our populace.
That's true.
So, that's true. You know, these things, we're going to have to implement some of these things again. It don't take much. It just takes some sacrifice on everybody's part, including these church buildings. I know they don't want to use that. They want to collect revenue and all that type of stuff. They don't want these buildings used and you know, people not paying anything. But we realize what's at stake, especially during the time, during these times of crisis, we realize what's at stake and what we have to do as a people. We have the mechanism to do it. It's not like we got to reinvent the wheel. It's people out there doing this already and was doing it before the pandemic. Marcus Klein was on here talking about what he's doing in Chicago. I think he's doing it in Brooklyn now, and in Atlanta. They opened up a branch of his academy. He's doing it in other places. And the children are excelling to astronomical heights. And it's not just him alone. It's other people doing these types of homeschoolings.
Right.
Chiki Okua has been on the program on several occasions talking about what he's doing in the Georgia area. It's people doing this, already doing this. We can let
Baruti.
Exactly. He was on Oshie's program the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It's people doing this that we can latch on to.
And, you know, Elliot, this, you know, I believe wholeheartedly, you know, and I advocate this wholeheartedly in relationship to, as you say, we doing it, right? And in this moment, and putting it in the context of, so people could, this is another manifestation, what you described in those numbers of the public health crisis that we're in,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, they're trying to get it with the virus, but we know there is a systemic virus. Some people call it white supremacy, you know, that has created this public health crisis to where, what you say, 40% in one, 30% in another. So we need to be dealing with that directly. And that's why I have to, you know, reemphasize my thinking on that, because as you laid out with Brother Marcus and, you know, and Brother Baruti and others, the homeschooling community need to become, because everything is politics, right? And when I don't, when I say politics, as you always say, it's not about politics looking in the political structure. It's about politics in relationship to self-governance amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly.
You know, and so those who are already homeschooling, that's an infrastructure, and it may be even coalitions. We need to center that, because those parents and resources can be the base one. And then, you know, like Brother Klein, he said, even though that there is some exchange going on, say monetary exchange, and he recognized that, in some cases that even that's difficult because of the economic situation where that we could, you know, some would call it private schooling. That's another, I'm going to call it system, right, that needs to be incorporated. And I'm thinking, Elliot, or I would like us to in this Freestyle Friday, to kind of, one of the elements as far as in the discussion, you know, raise that we start thinking strategically, because here you have homeschoolers, which obviously they have resources. Could they take one child and add to that? No, everybody don't want to bring everybody into their homes, but you live in a community where there may be somebody, there's exchange going on. So when the learning process is going on, you could take one child or two child to show that communal, that value system of communal, even though we're in a virus pandemic. And then the private is that next layer, because everybody don't have the income. Well, obviously, if you have public schooling, you got 60% and 70% of the people who can't attend, everybody can't, don't have the resources to pay for education. But they may have something. Isn't there something called bartering?
Yeah, everybody. Exactly. Everybody can do something.
Right.
Towards
that
the goal.
Where another child can be. And that becomes another layer of our educational infrastructure. And then it's the public school system, which is definitely external politics. Because here in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken, Height was supposed to be, or the public school system was supposed to have all these here computers, and they were supposed to have an arrangement with Comcast. Now, I might not have the details, Elliot. And maybe some of the audience can, you know, fill in, and maybe yourself can fill in it. But I thought Comcast was supposed to be offering internet access, because they have been talking about the digital divide for a long time.
Well, you know, a lot of that was smoke and mirrors and talk, Richard, especially during the time when what's his name? Byron Allen was talking about that lawsuit and them challenging the Civil Rights Act of 1865. They had to throw some stuff out there that they was in Black people's corner, that they were a friend of the community. And, you know, they had people trying to wave the public relations banner that they were trying to aid the community, and things have kind of died down. I don't know about all this the stuff that they're promising. I think it was just promises, because you can still see a lot of people don't have internet access. They don't have laptops or desktop computers, especially for these children. They don't have it.
And I seen a pictorial reference where they were saying to some of the children to go next to where they can get free Wi-Fi, you know, and sitting on a curb, you know, out there where they can pick up the signal in order to. But the thing comes back to that, you know.
I know that, Richard. But that's not. I mean, and you know better than me. That's not a learning environment for child. Exactly. You know, come on. That's exactly. Not a learning environment. You need, Brother Marcus was saying, when he goes around to look at potential students, he visits their homes, make sure they got a quiet place where they can focus and study. You remember he was saying that?
Oh, yeah.
That's what you need. You can't be sitting in the park and sitting outside. There's stuff going on, challenges in some of these communities. You just can't do that. We can't do that to our children. We got to do better. And again, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. These people are active in every city that the Time for Awakening listening audience is, various cities around this country. You've got some brother or sister that's doing a homeschooling program, a mentoring program. It's something going on. And especially during this period, it's something going on. It's up to us to find it out.
Organizing. That's the mantra. It seems simple, but it ain't. It isn't. It's simple. I seen this thing in physics that says simple systems have complex behavior. Complex systems have simple behavior. You know.
Yes, you know, it's a couple of things I want to throw out here during this Freestyle Friday articles and news articles. And the callers can always get involved with anything that they want to put in. But May 13th, Richard, it was a key date here in the city of Philadelphia and for the country, because something happened on May 13th, 1985, that happened just one other time in this sordid history of our experiences here in the United States, where a bomb was dropped on a black community. And it happened May 13th, 1985, in West Philadelphia section of the city. And at the time, I lived two blocks away from where that bomb was dropped.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And in fact, I used to go with a young lady. My cousin lived on the block, my first cousin. We were very close. And I used to go with a young lady that lived across the street from them on Pine, directly in the back of where Moo's house was on Osage Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I heard them when they were out there a lot of times. When they would pass out literature on the street or when they were on the bullhorn. I mean, I heard them, and I heard the people sometimes complain about it. A lot of people were used to them being in the neighborhood. They knew them. They knew the children. So, you know, you hear some of our people and some of our people ignorantly state about, oh, they were tired of them being in the neighborhood and things like that. Like that's supposed to have justified what happened to them. You know, that really grates my nerves when I hear some of our people talk silly like that. I don't say silly. That's crazy. But I want to share with the listening audience an article that a journalist here in the city of Philadelphia, Ernest Owens, wrote in the City Life magazine. It was in reference to the MOVE bombing. And also I want to share with another article that was in the Griot in reference to what happened the other day here in Philadelphia. But let me share this article, Richard. It says, if Philadelphia can't apologize for MOVE bombing 35 years later, how progressive are we? It's the title of the article. On May 13th, 1985, 11 people, including 5 children, were killed during a city-authorized bombing and burning of a black neighborhood in West Philadelphia. The state-sanctioned attack on the black liberation group known as MOVE also led to the fiery destruction of 61 surrounding homes, leaving 250 Philadelphians traumatized and homeless. Families were forever impacted as the spirit of Osage Avenue was decimated. No one responsible for one of the most horrific days in the city's history has ever been arrested or faced charges. As we are reminded each May, The world will never forget watching the city of brotherly love drop a bomb on its own civilians. Somehow, 35 years later, those impacted by the infamous move bombing have yet to receive a formal apology from the city government. Earlier this week, Mayor Jim Kenney said that he had no plans to issue an apology for move bombing. City Council President Darrell Clark declined to comment on the matter. It should be noted that neither Kenney or Clark had taken part in the reconciliation talks that have been going on for 2 years between those from MOVE and city officials, such as then DA Ed Rendell and former Mayor W. Wilson Good, who authorized the bombing during his tenure. There can never be an excuse for dropping an explosive from a helicopter onto a house where men, women, and children inside and letting them burn, Good said recently, when he wrote an op-ed apology for The Guardian. After 35 years, it would be helpful for the healing of all involved, especially the victims of this terrible incident, if there was a formal apology made by the city of Philadelphia. So far, council member Jamie Gaultier, whose district encompasses O'Shea Avenue, has been the only sitting council person to aggressively push for an official resolution from the city to apologize for the move bombing. It's long overdue, says Gaultier, told the Inquirer. This is a tragic and atrocious human rights tragedy committed on our government against its people. Much has been said about the city's progressive turn during the Kenney administration, but if Philadelphia truly wants to be a progressive city, our government must finally reckon with the violent disregard for human life and diverse communities on May 13th, 1985. Some would call an apology a bare minimum required to move forward. And yes, it would be just that, the very first step. Our current mayor's apparent nonchalantness about this leaves Philadelphia living in a hypocritical shadow over the past of our past, bound by the guilt and shame that comes from killing children. It's been 35 years. How can this city still have never officially apologized? Philly has since supported gender-neutral bathrooms, fair work weeks, cannabis decriminalization, banning the box on job applications, apologizing for bombing a neighborhood in the 80s should be common sense. Our city boasts that it's a sanctuary for outsiders. Our mayor defiles the bigotry exposed by our current commander-in-chief. And yet, we're in the height of hypocrisy if we don't hold ourselves accountable for the trauma inflicted in our backyard. The city was wrong then, and continuing to uphold an apology is an exact opposite of restorative justice. As our government's stubbornness endures, I feared that it could all happen again. There is no formal acknowledgement that we learned from the past. Now you know better. You're supposed to do better. Maybe it doesn't apply to the city's current leaders. While many Philadelphians, including descendants of MOVE members who lost their lives, battle with the human tragedy, the least of our city should do is to apologize for the things it could have and should have done better. It's like these when institutions and leaders show exactly who they are. When institutions and leaders show exactly who they are. We can only hope that ours aren't all smoke and mirrors. Now, this was an article by Ernest Owens in the City Life magazine, Philadelphia magazine, I think that was. His reflections on this, on the move bombing and the city's basically not acknowledging it. Now, let me share something, Richard, because it was something in the Griot the other day that said Philadelphia City Council apologizes for the 1985 move bombing that killed 11 people and five of them children. Now, that was in the Griot, Richard, which is, quote-unquote, black I guess you would say black directed or black, it's supposed to deal with black issues.
Mm-hmm.
At least they can do is get the story straight. Philadelphia City Council didn't apologize for 1985. And so the council was supposed to be.
There's no council.
No. Let me finish.
Mm-hmm.
It's 17 members in council. 11 council members apologized for it. One of them initiated it, Jamie Gaultier, who is the daughter of longtime activist and strong attorney here in this city. She's been on our program before. Leon Williams is his daughter. She just mm-hmm. went in council. You got some of them other do-nothings, both white and black, even though the city council in Philadelphia is overwhelmingly predominantly black. All those other do-nothings been sitting there for a long time. She just got in council. She ain't even been there a year, Richard.
Right.
She only been there a matter of months, and she initiated this. And she got other people to sign in on it. Now, you can look at the people that have signed in on it and see that, you know, we live here in Philadelphia. We can see the names of 17 council members. The ones that signed in on it, because I got them here. Keep in mind, it was her proposal, Jamie Gaultier. It says the city council members, the 11 that signed it, was Jamie Gaultier, Kendra Brooks. She's another one that just went in. From that, the green, it wasn't the green part. You remember, she just went in there.
Right. Yeah, the people working. I've got that.
Yeah. Helen.
Party, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Helen Gim, who's an Asian council person. Alan Dumb, who's been the white gentrifier for in this city for decades. Isaiah Thomas, another new council person. Catherine Gilmore Richardson. Mark Squilla. Curtis Jones Jr., who's the one that put up the sign for Wilson Good, acknowledging that he was the one of the greatest mayors in the city. And when the community, the West Philly community over there, which I was present at that meeting, when the West Philly community, along with Move Survivors, asked him not to do that, he arrogantly got up and said, well, you know, I could change my mind, but I'm not. So his name is on there, which is very hypocritical. Because if he had some type of epiphany, he should come and tell the people, especially the ones that he disrespected at that church meeting. Now, let me finish the names here. Maria Quinones Sanchez, Kenyatta Johnson. You know, it's issues going on with him. Sherelle Parker. All of them issued the statement, would the city apologize for the bombing? I don't know who worded the statement. I haven't read the proclamation. I've heard comments about in reference to the proclamation. All I know is that they signed on to it. Now, you got some other ones that didn't sign. Bobby Heenan, that guy's track record speaks for himself. He's under indictment, white council person from a district that's totally racist. Darrell Clark, who's the council president and a black guy. Now,
I'm a heavy, historically operated black section of the city.
Certainly. Now, Ernest Owen said in the article that he was unavailable for comment. How are you unavailable to your own community? This tragedy happened. Sure, it happened to Move, but it reflects on all black people in this city and in this country. When a bomb is dropped on a neighborhood and killed children in a house, innocent people who didn't do anything worthy of any death, let alone jail. You don't have any comment, Darrell Clark. Cindy Bass, another black council person that's up there near my shop area. She represents that shop area. It's in West Oak Lane. Didn't sign it. No comment. Derek Green, he's a new council person, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's black. Brian O'Neill, well, his name speaks for itself, who he represents. And David O, another Asian council person. Now, there's two Asian council persons on council here in Philadelphia. The one of them signed it. See, they got a strategy, and our people need to stop being foolish. They got a strategy when they do this stuff. You got one that signed it. And she got political aspirations. She's out there pretending she's a black, a friend to the black community. You got the other one that didn't sign it. And then you got the ones that did. So just like when we had Dr. Kaba Khamenei on last week, and when the call out of New York Jay mentioned about we need to tell our people who the enemy is. You remember?
Yeah.
And you remember what Dr. Kaba said? He said, well, he said, I might upset some people, although he didn't upset me. When he said, we can't be pointing the finger at these people, even though they've been a perpetual enemy. But he said, some of our people have become enemies. You remember when he said that?
Yeah.
So when you see this type of stuff happening, where a brand new council person that ain't been in council 4 months got to put forth some type of proclamation for this city, when some of them other ones been there for over a decade, and she got to twist their arm to get them to be involved. Some of them, it's clear that they're not sincere for what they're doing. It's clear why they signed it. And then you got others that didn't sign it and don't have no comment. Our people got to stop. Listen, Richard, we got to do better than this. It's party, it's independent black parties here in Pennsylvania. If our people want to get involved in politics and keep talking about the moving the community ahead, I'm talking about politics as far as an organizational tool. We need to start developing candidates in the community to run for these seats and get these people out of there. They're doing they're doing harm to the community. They don't represent the interests of the community, period. They represent personal interests. Several, there's a couple of them that I just read off that's black, that's up on that got charges pending.
There you go. Yeah. You know,
I just wanted to read that because, you know, this griot got the stuff all twisted talking about Philadelphia City Council apologizes. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Not as a whole. You got members that apologize. They can't apologize for the whole city because the mayor said that he don't intend to address it at all, which is not surprising. You got Good out here. You know, Good is an older man, and I'm not saying, you know, yeah, listen, you can look at it any way you want. He's an older man now, and he wants something done to atone for what he did under his watch.
Or, you know, could it be precisely said, happened under his watch, whether he did it or not? I guess it still may be up for question. Because at that time...
Yeah, well, if you remember, Richard, he took responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't have no problem taking responsibility for it.
And they told him not to come out, too.
Yeah. But I just wanted to share that with the listening audience in the reference to that tragic day here, May 13th, 1985, here in the city of Philadelphia, and what happened. And how it's still... Oh, you know, look. And I want to read something that mayor said, if I can find this ludicrous statement that he made. It was in that Griot article. Shoot, it might be a little difficult for me to find that. But he made a statement about the city being that they atoned for because the city is being rebuilt, the homes out there. I can't find that, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
But he made a statement about that they kind of addressed this because the neighborhood is being rebuilt. That's supposed to be some type of reconciliation for it. That's 35 years, Richard, that community has been in turmoil and those homes hadn't been rebuilt properly. One time they rebuilt them, they were shabby. The people that moved in them, they had constant complaints. They moved out of the places. My cousin moved back in her place after she was burned out. And it was so much complaints and shoddy workmanship. Now, all of a sudden, sure, Sure, now all of a sudden, 35 years later, this mayor want to take credit because the area is being rebuilt. If you go out there, Richard, you see why that area is being rebuilt out there. And I don't have to tell you why. You know why.
Oh, yeah.
Gentrification. That's why it has been rebuilt. These people, I expect that from these white politicians and white leadership. You learn to expect that. And our people that expect things differently from them is just sadly mistaken. But, you know, it really grates on your nerves when these black leadership try to act like they're your friend and do all this type of stuff to their own people. And then there's no consequences. Our community don't hold them responsible for it. You know, let me share this other article before I kind of open up the phones here. And it deals with the young lady that got gunned down in her home. And it reminded me of Fred Hampton Sr. She's in her home, and her mate, they were asleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was late. It was early in the morning when the police bashed in the door with a battering ram and unload on her. They shot the young man she's with and killed her. Shot her 8 times. She killed her. I don't know the situation or the status of the young man that was with her. I know he had been shot. But let me read this article that was a published report. And this was in News 1 in reference to the young lady there in Louisville, Kentucky. The title of it, No Knock Warrants, Like the One Used to Kill Breonna Taylor, has a deadly history of going wrong. Hold on a second. It says a type of search warrant used when officers from Louisville Police Department botched the raid that killed Breonna Taylor in March has a deadly history. Oftentimes, no-knock warrants that allow officers to legally raid private property without warning disproportionately target black, brown, and poor people, resulting in civil rights lawsuits and in some cases prompting police departments to abandon the controversial practice. The Louisville Courier-Journal reported that the cops who broke into Taylor's home she shared with her boyfriend knocked, despite having the nature of the warrant allowing them to skip that formality. Now, that's what this published report says. The young man said that they didn't knock. They came running right into place with a battering ram. But they may not have announced or identified themselves properly, since Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, used his legally owned firearm to shoot the suspected burglars who were trying to gain entry to the premises. And he got in parentheses here, the author of the article, also known as Stand Your Ground. Police then rushed into the home and shot Taylor and Walker. Walker survived the barrage of bullets. Taylor, an EMT, who was an essential worker amid the coronavirus, did not. However, it turned out that the city, not only did the cops raid the wrong location, but the suspected drug dealer was already in custody. That means that neither the police nor the judge who signed a no-knock warrant did their due diligence, despite theoretically being well aware of the deadly consequences that a botched raid with those warrants can many times result in. All of which brings the focus on the value of black lives, who, as mentioned before, as far too often disproportionately target of such warrants. In Taylor's case, even though the actual address of the actual suspected trap house was 10 miles away from her home, police still arrested Walker and charged him with attempted murder of police. Do you hear that, Richard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Vox, who wrote this article, cited two separate but similar cases of botched no-knock warrants executed in Texas with equal results along racial lines in both cases. Each homeowner fired their legal guns at police, raiding their homes by mistake. While both men were charged with capital murder, a grand jury did not indict the white suspect, while a grand jury allowed the charges to stand against the black suspect. No-knock warrants have a history, from the war on drugs as an effective pretense to racial profiling. The U.S. Supreme Court reached a unanimous decision in 1997 that drug warrants like the one used in Taylor's case do not automatically justify the no-knock treatment, but judges continually sign and authorize them with impunity. In addition to the avoidable loss of life, I'm going to stop there. Now, Richard, it talked about the use of this no-knock warrant. And the author didn't have to put this in the article. We know that it disproportionately targets black people, these warrants, kicking down doors and battering rams. And then if a mistake made, oops, my bad, if you're killed. Now, let's go a little deeper into this no-knock. You know, because we hear a lot of our black, like I said before, I don't care what a lot of these other politicians are talking about. You hear a lot of our black politicians, when they come on the air and talk with some black media, they complain about Trump, 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 this Trump. Let me share with you this article here, Richard, and get your opinion on it. It says, Trump signs a bill into law allowing warrantless searches in parts of Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. Did Congress pass and Trump sign a bill that allow warrantless searches of homes without hardly anyone noticing? The answer is yes, according to the Free Thought Project, which reported this. A bill that allows homes to be searched without warrant was passed with overwhelming support by the United States Congress and signed into law by President Donald Trump. And it happened with no media coverage and very little fanfare. The House Joint Resolution 76 was signed into law on Tuesday, August 22nd of 2017 by President Donald Trump. The text seemingly fairly granting the consent and approval of Congress for the Commonwealth of Virginia, the state of Maryland, and the District of Columbia to enter into a compact relating to the establishment of the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission. Now, Richard, we see here that this law, this bill, was signed into law by Trump. Mm-hmm. But it passed through the Congress. The CBC voted for this law because five people dissented against this particular law that went into effect. And all five of them were Republicans. So that means it got overwhelming support from the Democratic Party. And Trump signed it. So this particular bill had nonpartisan support. Now, this wasn't white media to put this out. Let me read this again. A bill that allows homes to be searched without warrant was passed with overwhelming support by the United States Congress and signed into law by President Donald Trump. It happened with no media coverage and very little fanfare. Shouldn't your elected officials, ones that represent you, ones that look like you, answer to this? Why would you sign something like this into law? Why would you pass it through your legislative body, Congress? Why, knowing that this is a smoking gun, a loaded gun pointed at your communities with these no-knock warrants? Why would you sign it into law? And you know, by signing this into law in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., it'll spread like wildfire around the country. That's what they do with legislation. Once it passes in one area, they propose it in others. Congress signed this. I didn't hear them complaining about Trump then. Where was we got to get him out of there then? When you sign a no-knock warrant where they can kick in doors of innocent black people in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. They ain't kicking in no white doors, and if they're doing it, it's totally by mistake. They're going to kick in your doors, roust your family, maybe kill some of your members, trash your house. And then you don't have no recourse. It was a mistake. And in this case, this man is charged with trying to kill a cop after they done busted in his place at night dressed in black. There was a SWAT team. You don't know who's coming in your house. They're dressed in black. This man had illegal. It wasn't like he had no a Saturday night, but they don't even call him that anymore, Richard. No Saturday night. He had a legal gun in his house. And that's staying your ground. Somebody busts through your door and you're in the bed at night, you and your missus. I just wanted to throw that out there because these people, unless you know, I remember a legendary talk show host in Philadelphia, Mary Mason. She's an older woman now. She's in her close to 90, mid-80s. She used to say for years to keep a scorecard. Our people got to keep a scorecard with these politicians and stop all this hero worshiping. And then we don't get caught up in Barack, Michelle. You don't get caught up in all this hero worship when you see what these people have done and their track record. Like she gets up there and scolds black people, talking about, when I was on the stage with Hillary Clinton, I felt so bad for her because y'all didn't come out and vote. She's an intelligent woman, and she know that statement is bullshit. Excuse the expression. Why don't you scold them white women? They're the ones that didn't put Hillary in office. 53% of white women voted for Trump. Her own women, her own sisters didn't vote for her. Sure, 98% voted for her husband. 98% of black folks voted for her husband. 98% didn't support Hillary Clinton, but she got well over 90%. That's more than to put anybody in office when you get a racial group that votes for you 90% strong. So it wasn't black folks' fault that woman's not in office. But you're going to get up there and in front of a black audience and try to scold them, similar to when your husband was singing Al Green and then scolded the black community, talking about kick off your bedroom slippers and do something or whatever he said. We got to keep a scorecard with these people. That way we don't get in all that hero worship. We don't have time for that now. Our people are in distress. And this pandemic makes the distress even harder. You got these white folks out there screaming, I want to go back to work. I don't care about the pandemic. I want to make some money. Because they're unemployment. Now, Richard, if you notice, they haven't put out the black unemployment figure yet. They put out white unemployment. And the unemployment is 14.7%. Now, before this thing started, I think it was 3% with whites. It's up to 14.7%. And they feeling the pinch. They screaming. They hollering. You hear it.
Oh, yeah.
But let me say something here. Now, they've been keeping figures since 1972 for black unemployment. I'm just going to start from 1990. And then I'll tell you the average after I'm done. In 1990, black unemployment. Now, this is the national average. You know that's not what went on in these cities. It's a lot higher than that. Well, let me read you. I'm sorry, hold on a second, Richard. Let me read you the national averages. In 1990, the national average black unemployment was 11.4%. In 91, 12.5%. In 92, 14.2%. In 93, 13%. In 94, 11.5%. In 95 and 96, it was the same, 10%. In 97, 10%. Let me skip up to 2000s. I don't want to bore you with those figures. 2002, 10.2%. 2008, 10.8%. 2004, 10.4%. 2005, 10%. 2008, 10.1%. 2009, 14.8%, 2010, 16%, 2011, 15.8%, 2012, 13.8%, 2013, 13.1%, 2014, 11.3%. It only started coming down a little bit in these single figures the past couple of years, and it's still high as hell. The national average for blacks in the past over 30 years is over 10%. And these whites screaming because it's 14%, they act like the world's coming to an end. We've been living with double-digit unemployment for over 40 years. Our people have been struggling. They don't give a damn about you. When we going to realize this and do for ourselves? They finally feeling the pinch that you've been feeling for over 30 years. And you see how they can't take it. They can't take it, Richard. And it's only been a couple months. You've been living like this for generations.
Yeah, that's the American experience.
Let's take a break. Let's take a brief break. And when we come back, I'll go to some of these callers here that we got on the line. Again, we're in Freestyle Friday mode here in the Time for an Awakening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an Awakening. It's 9:07 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the largest independent black digital radio and podcasting platform. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
And I think we are in a new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality, and they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
Up, you mighty race. You can accomplish what you will. Build your future on these foundations: freedom, justice, and equality. What is the definition of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man, and where and when is it to be attained?
Well, take equality first. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't teach us to associate equality with whites. Equality has nothing to do with whites. We don't want to be equal with the white man. He's not the criteria or yardstick by which equality is measured. He's not in a position to tell us we are equal. It's not his right. It's not his to do. Equality, we want equality. We had equality before the white man was created. We had equality before the white man came into existence. And we want equality whether the white man is on this earth or not. Equality means the opportunity to develop all of our dormant potential, all of our dormant capability. In developing this dormant capability, the right and the ability to stand on this earth on some land of our own and bring about a civilization and a society in which we will be completely independent, complete freedom to take care of the needs, to take care of the wants and the likes and the dislikes of our people. To establish our own nation, our own society, our own heaven, our own future. This is what we mean by freedom, by equality. And justice means, as you sow, so shall you reap. If you do wrong, you'll get wrong in return. And if you do right, you'll get right in return. When you're in your own nation, in your own land, you're in a position to get justice. But when you're in another man's country, in another man's land, under another man's flag and under another man's government and under another man's court system, you have to look to that other man for justice, and you'll never get it. And Negroes in this country probably are authorities on that.
Because, now listen carefully now, America has to pay for the sins that she has committed, the genocide of the native people, the transatlantic slave trade that brought us here, the lynchings, the brutality, the killing of us without any thought of justice coming to us. Do you think that God is pleased? The system of white supremacy rules the political, educational, spiritual, cultural, economic, legal, whatever you want. White supremacy is ruling. So don't get it twisted.
One black man believes in violence. One believes in integration. One believes that one day after we all marry white women, We'll all be a light brown color. There'll be no problem. One believes that if we get enough politics and education, we can take over the country and be the mayor and the president. One believes, such as I, that separating on some land will solve it. Cleaning up our own neighborhoods, respecting our own women, and doing something for ourselves and quit begging white people. This is our solution.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:15 here in the city of Philadelphia on our Freestyle Friday program. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to drop a, let's go to call or two here. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
Hey, sir. What's going on?
I'm glad your brother's doing well. I'm doing okay myself. I ain't going to say okay. I'm maintaining. With all this mad around us, I'll just say I'm maintaining. Okay, Brother Ellen and Richard, I'll leave it at that. So I'd be lying if I said I'm doing well, because how can you do well when sisters getting shot in their own house with their boyfriends and a brother getting jogging and getting murdered at the hands of white thugs? I mean, I can't say I'm doing well. I'm just maintaining. But I want to thank you, Brother Ellen, you and Brother Richard, for playing those little short speeches by Dr. King, Brother Malcolm, the minister, and Muhammad Ali and stuff. That was some good, some nice little, you know, bites of speeches, parts of the bits of the speeches that you played. And it was, and it was very informal. The words that both, all four of those brothers spoke was very informal, very enlightening, you know. And, you know, Brother Elliot, you made me think back to my grandmother, Nanny. That's my father's mother. She made transition back in 95. She's a native of Lynchburg, Virginia. And I remember my grandma used to always tell me when I was growing up with her white folks, because she lived, as you know, she was born in, my grandmother was born in 1905, I think it was, somewhere around that time she was born. Well, anyway, she, you know, she lived like a lot of, I'm sure like a lot of your foreparents, Elliot, and your foreparents, Richard, she lived through the Great Depression. And even prior, even before the, this was one of the myths, even prior before the Depression even hit white America, white folks was going off the deep even then, because like you said, Brother Elliot, they crying about being out of work or catching hard economic times for a month when we've been dealing with this for 400 years. Well, my grandmom said prior to the Depression, white folks was jumping out of windows even then. I mean, when the Depression hit, of course, it kind of like, you know, it was an uptick in there, of course. But these white folks, they was jumping out of windows and just going crazy. They couldn't stand to be poor, man. They was whereas black folks, there was already victims of racism, unemployment, poverty, poor housing, poor. They made the best of a bad situation. I mean, our black foreparents back then, they would do what they could to keep our people fed. We was poor. Some of us were so poor, like you said, we didn't even know it. They would get the little beans, the lima beans, collard greens, whatever, chicken, ham, whatever they could find to try to feed our people, to keep our people, you know. They did what they had to do at the particular time. They didn't commit suicide. And they was living in some horrendous conditions. But these white folks, they were jumping out of windows, killing themselves, killing their families. I mean, these people can't take no pressure, man. And then, of course, like I say, when the Depression hit, oh, all hell broke loose. Then they really start going crazy. And then, like, in Elliot, and to your credit, when you made this point, you and Brother Richard, a year or two ago, you know, when you look at these white folk heroes that they make heroes out of, these Bonnie and Clydes, these John Dillingers, Pretty Boy Floyds, all these white people that was going around here committing mayhem, these was white folks, like you said, that were shut out of the American mainstream. So they resorted to crime. You know what I mean? They resorted to robbing banks, robbing stores, killing people, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. You know what I mean? Because these people was at their hit wits end, because they was, you know, they was white. They was considered white trash. They were shut out of American mainstream. You know what I mean? But see, that's the part of white history that white folks don't like to talk about. You don't see the Sean Hannitys and the wrestling bars. They don't want to talk about that. They know about it. They don't want to talk about it. But they always want to put this crime and poverty on a black face. But they don't point on their own. And you can use that same analogy with the drug thing. You know, when black folks was when crack cocaine was devastating black communities across America, like it was like lock the niggas up and everything. But some of the white folks get hooked on it. These white kids, and a lot of these white kids come from the suburbs of Jersey and surrounding Pennsylvania suburbs. When they got hooked on drugs and stuff, it'd be sympathetic. Oh, if they need help. These are addicted people, you know. They don't need jail. They need treatment. But black folks lock them niggas up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we see always how the paradigm changes when the color changes. All of a sudden, the paradigm changes, you know? And like you said, it's outrageous that this brother in Louisville, Kentucky, who was the boyfriend of our late sister, Breonna Taylor, hit his brother facing attempted murder charges. When it's amazing when these laws, these stand your ground laws, don't apply to black folks, or the Castle Doctrine, but don't apply to black folks, but it applies to white thugs like Zimmerman and all these other white people. It applies to them, but when a black man defends his house or his home, he goes to jail or he gets charged with a crime. And I want to know, Ellen, why is, and maybe you and Richard could answer this for me, why is not this Congressional Black Caucus raising holy hell about what happened to Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery? Why is they not? They should be on every TV show, Fox News, CNN, whatever media they can get to, they need to be raising the holy hell. Where is these Negroes at? I want to know.
Well,
I'm missing something.
I just read to you, Joe, where a bill passed through Congress, and Trump signed it, that allowed them to conduct these no-knock warrant searches in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. It passed through Congress. A lot of those people that you're talking about were sitting there. They did it. The only people that voted against it was five Republicans. That bill got bipartisan support. These no-knock warrants are going to disproportionately affect black people. So you asking where were they? They were, they're there. Let me read to you again the paragraph here in this published report. A bill that allows homes to be searched without warrants was passed with overwhelming support by the United States Congress and signed into law by President Donald Trump, the great boogeyman, the Democrats hate so much. They passed this bill through Congress, and it was signed by Trump. And it happened with no media coverage and very little fanfare. This is what this article is saying. And it gives you the bill number. House Joint Resolution 76 was signed into law on August 22nd, 2017, by Donald Trump. So they might not want to say anything, because that might get intelligent blacks to start looking at what's going on. The hero worshiping of our people, the hero worshiping segment might not care about it. They might just want to keep on hero worshiping. But some of our people that do want to do a little research, keep a scorecard, want to find out what these people are really doing, if they do a little research, if somebody acknowledges something, then they do a little research and find out that Brother Joe from Philadelphia signed this into law, then you question them on it, like you questioned the congressperson in Philadelphia, and I recorded it and put it on the air when he asked about the Blue Lives Matter bill, and he's, what you talking about? I don't know. I never heard of it. And told a big lie when they had signed that bill that Wednesday. He was on the air that Saturday.
And lying through his teeth. Not lying like the scoundrel that he is. Now, Elliot, for point of reference, now that bill that you just mentioned, now what was the date that bill was signed in the law?
It says here August 17th of 2017 by Donald Trump.
And see, I'm glad you gave me that time reference.
August 22nd, I'm sorry. What did I say, August 17th? August
22nd. Because the four women known as the Squad, they wasn't in the Congress at that time. See, that's I'm glad you pointed that out, because there's no doubt in my mind, AOC, she's the name, Omar, them, they wouldn't have voted for that bill. So they wasn't in Congress at the time. They wouldn't, they and stuff. It was the people that was before them, they signed that bill. That's why I'm going to get that clarification for the time for we can listen on. That's why I needed the timeline and stuff. But that old twisted sissy Dwight Evans, he was in Congress at the time, though, you know, but he had no problem signing that. See, you know, these Negroes, they play out people for stupid. They play out people for stupid. Like you say, he got up there and lied. And I remember Brother Otis even came there. Brother Otis says, nowhere in the world he didn't know that or didn't see that bill. He knew that bill came down the pike. See, they play out people for stupid. They have a history. Not only him on the federal level, but right here in Philadelphia, you got some of these Negroes on city council, as well as some of these state reps and stuff. When those bills come through that hurt black people, I never forget Harold James, who instead of the former state representative, he got up there one time and some kind of bill came through, and it was a bill that was, I forgot exactly, because Brother Robert mentioned it to me, it was a bill that was devastating for our people, and this Negro had the nerve to sit there and say, well, I saw it, but I signed it, but I really knew what I was signing. You know, I should have looked at it. I just signed it, but I didn't know how bad. Some old stupid, some convoluted stuff. He said to myself, well, either way, that makes you look like a fool, because you're a liar. If you're going to sit there and sign something that you'll know the hell you signed, that means you're stupid, and if you signed it, and stuff that means stupid.
Your phone's so breaking up.
People. Oh, I'm sorry, Elliot. So can you hear me a little better than Elliot?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I got him a little better location. So what I'm saying, Ellen Richard, is he made himself look like a fool either way, because if you're going to sit there and say that you signed something that you didn't know that was going to be that devastating on black people, then you're a fool for signing something that you weren't even aware of. And if you sign it willingly and you're lying, that means you have to be Negro. So either way, you don't come out looking good. You understand what I'm saying, Brother Elliot? You don't look good either way. But this is what that fool had the nerve to sit there and say. You know, I didn't know I was signing. I mean, I didn't know it. I mean, like, dude, come on, man. You were an intelligent man. You've been a police officer for 30-something years before he became a state rep. Come on, man. You're not stupid, man. Who you think you're talking to? You know? I mean, these Negroes, I'm telling you, man, they play black people for stupid. Because we know the white politicians play us for dumb, and the Negroes do play us for stupid, man. You know? But, again, it all comes down to being an informed voter, knowing who you're voting for, because, like I said, as long as we keep on voting for these kind of individuals, we're going to continue to get it. We're going to continue to get more Breonna Taylors, Omar Arbery's, move situations and stuff. I mean, I hate to say it, but we're going to continue to get them kind of tragic situations because we got this poor leadership on the city, state, and federal level. They don't want to eradicate race and white supremacy and white dominance. They want to be comfortable in it. As long as them Negroes and get their check and congregate with white folks and drink and congregate and play touchy-touchy with white folks, they're okay with it. They play that rhetoric. They'll get on black radio and terrestrial radio and talk all that stuff about fighting racism and everything. But at the end of the day, they ain't trying to stop it. And I'm going to tell you, I'm just going to be straight up with you, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard. A brother told me today, he lives over in Jersey. He listens to our terrestrial radio station. And I told him on the Yard Show, I told him to start listening to Time from the Wicked and everything. He said he's going to start listening to Time from the Wicked. Hopefully he's listening tonight. He says, Joe, and it just going to show you how like minds think alike. I never mentioned this guy to this brother. He says, Joe, one of the most dangerous Negroes that y'all got in Philadelphia, who is nothing but a traitorous to black folks. He said, because we got one over here in Kansas, Jersey, is that city council president of yours, Dow Clark. He said, Negro is bear watching. I said, brother, you ain't telling me nothing. I don't know. I said, I trust that Negro as far as I could throw him. He's a disgrace in this life. He's a disgrace in the next life. I mean, it's just, wow. You know, I mean, when you look, like you said, when you look at, like you read when Richard first came on about how Dow Clark said he got no intention. He had nothing to do with this so-called resolution for the apology. Again, not surprised there. And Kenny pretty much just said, F the whole thing. Now them Negroes supported Kenny, right? Oh, Mayor Kenny this, Mayor Kenny that. He told total disdain for the Moore family's humanity and what was done to these people and stuff, you know? I mean, I'm telling you, man, we just like a glutton for punishment. You know, we just continually support these individuals that have no love at all for our people and stuff, man. You know, we just, I don't know what it's going to take, man. I just don't know it's going to take some of our people to wake up and smell the coffee, man. And I'll close with this, Brother Elliot, because I don't want to take up so much of y'all time, because I know you got other callers. Like, you take with this upcoming election, in spite of what happened on May the 13th, 35 years ago, what happened just recently down in Georgia with a brother Ahmaud Arbery and Sister Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. With all this going on and all those tragic things that are happening and still happening to our people, all Negroes can do, all black people can get on that radio station and stuff, the politicians as well as the hosts. The answer to all that is, guess what, Elliot and Richard, is to vote for Joe Biden in November. That's the answer.
Well,
you got to get rid of Trump. You got to get rid of Trump. That's the rallying, that's the clarion call. You got to get rid of Trump. You got to vote for Joe Biden. That's it. No demands on Joe Biden. No black people saved his ass, his election. No demands on him. And so he got this little phony thing about lift every voice, what I can do for the black, that BS putting down. But my point is that no big demands from black leadership, no agenda to go to Biden and say, look, if you want the black vote like Obama got, this is our agenda. No agenda at all. So the answer to deal with all the tragic issues like Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and MOVE, and issues like that, Trayvon Martin, just vote for Joe Biden in November. That's it. Just get rid of Trump and everything will be fine. Got to get rid of Trump because Donald Trump is the king devil. So we got to get rid of him. Once you get rid of him, everything is fine. Never mind the fact that black folks was catching hell under Reagan, both Bushes, Clinton, Obama, all of them. They was catching hell. But at the end of the day, just get rid of Trump and everything will be fine. So there you go. So, hey. That's where we stand right now, brothers. I hate to say it like that, Ellen Richard, but that's the reality. That's the answer from these Negro hosts on that station and the black politician that call in. The whole answer is the vote, you know, for Donald Trump, and everything will be fine. So, hey, thanks, Brother Richard and Ellen, for letting me express myself. I'll get off now.
Peace. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Brother Ellen. Thanks, Brother Richard.
All right, now.
Yeah, Richard, he raised a good point there. Because you see, Biden got a plan for you now. He got the Lift Every Voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's his plan for Black America. You know, all of them got the plan. We read that before, maybe about a year ago. The different titles of the, I think I started from Johnson and read up to Nixon, read Reagan. All of them had, you know, they had some type of plan for the Black America. I think Nixon had a benign neglect, so he didn't really have no plan. His benign neglect was his. But the rest of them had some type of plan. They had some little mantra that they used as the plan for Black America. The two recent ones that I remember, and even Trump had one. He had a title for one. You remember that one that he had? Forgot the title of it. He had a plan for Black America.
Who's that now? Which
Trump,
one is that?
Trump, when he came in. All of them got this little...
That's the zone or the opportunity zone.
Well, all of them got those little mantras and plans. Obama had one, the Brother's Keeper. All of them got these little plans that they have where it's going to uplift black people. But if you notice, in all of these plans, you're never at the table. You might have a few integrationists at the table. You might, but you don't make up these plans. They make up these plans for you. Just like Amos Wilson said in one of the clips I played, they always want this patriarchal type of relationship with black people, where we make your decisions for you and you go along with it.
Yes, yeah. It's,
paternalistic. You know, thanks, Brother Otis.
It's just rough. It's rough. I mean, I, Elliot, because I believe that we should be governing ourselves, right? So, I mean, I just believe that. So even with that, they're only making a plan because we're absent of one of our own. And it goes back to that point that, you know, you always mention about, utilizing the having a assembly or a party process. That's where you're supposed to formulate your own policy or cultivate your own political leadership and then put them within the arena to, you know, to execute your plan, because a policy is nothing but your plan, right? And if you don't do that, that's the reverse will happen. You know, for example, you know, one in a million, when we're talking about the police and this hair, no knock, right? On one of the agenda items, you remember that it was having a misconduct insurance for law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So what about if we had, at our level, local moving to the state, moving, you know, to the national, that the cops would have to have a liability policy, because when they do these things and they award these cases for this mishap, right? Who pays for it? We pay for it, because if the parents in their grief and the loved ones in their grief, they file suit against the police department, which is filing suit against the city, the money that comes out of that, right? That comes from taxpayers, tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are we losing a member of our community, we're paying. And as you laid out in that scenario, that case, from the judge to the police officers, to the people. I mean, it was a whole lot of supposedly miscommunication that these two people and this one sister get killed. Because if there was some information going on beforehand, she wouldn't have got killed. But who's going to pay? Well, the members in the community pay, and then the citizens of the community who have least resources are going to pay, because they're going to be rightfully, people are going to file suit, even though that there's no compensation for loss of life, right? And hear that. But if we push through, and it has to be pushed through as a policy, right? That they, each individual police officer, using, you know, this here plank from one organization, political association, political organization, one in a million, if that was our agenda item and we pushed it locally, you know, through states and through the national, then do you think that they would have some, because that liability insurance would be expensive.
Oh, certainly it would. Yeah.
Plus, they won't have no union that they have to, because it doesn't, you know, it wouldn't be no union. It would be them who did the act, and it's coming out, you know, really that you made misjudgment. Now, in this case, Aubrey is a whole different thing, right? You know, I mean, that's individuals. But even then, you got the district attorney and others that are involved in that, right? Who are aware that these individuals had done something that, even if you go through that just seemed not to be right. And they had the tapes, Elliot. I mean, I think you informed me that. They had the tapes. They knew. If they didn't have the tapes, they had the investigation. And said that this one, but the district attorney, being a friend of the one of the men who did the shooting, told him to forget it. So what I'm saying, Elliot, you know, again, going to this principle of how we need to organize, not only do we have to do that, but we have to use the political process to do that. You know, when you were talking about that law about no knock, that was passed, just passed in Congress, do you know they just passed under FISA, a surveillance, where now that under the FISA ruling, they could be able to go into your house, collect data, offer your internet data without a warrant?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not surprising me.
So not only they can go in and physically, they can collect information on you. And what do they call, and this was supposed to be about terrorists and extremists, but what do they call that? And Congress passed it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Congress passed it. The Senate, it was in the Senate that it got kicked back because they were saying like, whoa, that's too much. You know, but but the thing is, you know, the racialization is not just last year, if it was last year, how much the blow up was about black identity extremists and who falls under that. So if they make a misrepresentation and going in your house under no knock, supposedly with a warrant, but don't have to inform you. What happens when they don't need a warrant to be tapping into your internet and your information? And because you say something, you express an opinion. What happens when they take that and say that isn't a terrorist threat? And I think it was the young brother who was he down south that just got, not too long ago, got picked up, locked up, because they considered him a black identity extremist because of what he said? I mean, wasn't that not too long ago?
I'm not sure about the incident.
So, I don't know, Elliot.
Your brother Otis said Dallas X. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'd have to refresh myself about the particular incident. I noticed something that Brother Otis put in the chat room over here. Let me scroll down so I can see it. Oh, it says the CBC, I've been on the CBC over this corona, bill number 3. It gave Betsy DeVos power to override the actual bill provisions for poor communities. Now, that's something I want to check out. I'm not surprised, but that's something I want to check out.
Mm.
Especially if you keep it a scorecard. The power to override actual bill provisions for poor communities. Wow.
At the same, it's I've been, ranting about that bill 6666 that Rush signed.
In fact, let me bring him. Let's go to Newport News. Let's bring him on here. Newport News, you there?
You there? Hey, can you gentlemen hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, look, I'm going to just give it to you real quick. After checking on that bill, I kept seeing the CBC, because I do some work against them with ADOS. So I'm always emailing them and stuff. But then I go looking through Gray Zone and a couple of other sites, and I start finding out that they keep bragging about how they got money set aside. Remember, for this, the third one was them making up for not getting money to black businesses in Corona number 2.
Mm-hmm.
They were bragging about how they got this done and all this money. It's supposed to have been $350 million set aside for minority businesses, and was written into the bill that small minority businesses had to be the first ones to the trough. So guess what ends up happening? They did the same crap they did in the first bill, where Mnuchin could decide who was going to get money from the Fed. This time around, it ends up, because that money comes to Betsy DeVos, she used her power as a regulator to decide that money will be dispersed to all of the schools and low-income people and people, regardless of income. So, and I'm going to give you, just off the top of my head, I'll find an article and send it to you later. But what ends up happening is, by law, when they first passed it and the CBC bragging about it in writing, supposedly, those places that Betsy DeVos changed this bill for, they would have gotten grants like $20,000, $200,000 or whatever. DeVos changed the formula, allowed them in, and some of them have already gotten millions, even though they are faith-based schools and charters. and have nothing to do with low income, which is what the CBC is bragging about. Because you know I'm that Negro. I'm on their behind.
I guess that's where the Catholic Church got all that money out of that that $350 billion stimulus package. Thank you for your contribution, Brother Otis.
Duty, man, duty.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said that's duty, man. I tell all my friends when they talk about you an agitator, you old. I said, you know what? If I had this kind of technology when I was really young and swift of mind, I probably would have caught a bullet by now. I don't think nothing. When I see them telling a lie, I don't think nothing of putting it right to them. And I keep laughing because once they muted me, and you can tell on Twitter when you're muted. So I started screenshotting this stuff and sending it to some of my friends, and they started posting it. So at least they unmuted me. They're ignoring me, but they see what I write.
Thank you for your contribution.
Be strong, brother. Right. Be strong.
You know, Richard, Brother Otis talked about some of the money that was diverted out of that $350 billion stimulus that's supposed to help small businesses. You know,
right.
And, you know, black small businesses in this country. But let me, and I'm glad he mentioned that. Let me check this out. Let me read some of this stuff here. This is from a published report. The title of it is "There Wasteful Spending in the Corona Stimulus Bill." Now, if you remember that first $350 billion, black folks were saying, where's the money? They ain't getting, wasn't getting no money. Then in the second one, you've seen a few black businesses getting some money. Let me read to you some of the things here, and I'm quite sure this is not all of it. This came from March 26th now, when the first one was initiated. Last night, the Senate unanimously passed the $2 trillion Phase 3 emergency aid package to help America businesses recover from the coronavirus lockdown. The previous phase provided funding for testing and paid family leave. Not one U.S. senator voted against the legislation, 96 to nothing. Twice during the first hour debate, the final version was distributed. No one had time to read the final package. A bipartisan group of lawmakers proposed essential workers. No, wait a minute. Let me get down to some of the things here. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell from Kentucky introduced his 250-page version of the Coronavirus Relief and Economic Security Act. It eventually became the $2 trillion CARES Act, Corona Aid Relief Economic Security. 2 days ago, in a ramp-up negotiation, House Democrats, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, introduced the Take Responsibility for Workers Family Act, or their version. And their version was $2.5 trillion. Our auditors, now this is the publishers of this article, it says our auditors dug deep into McConnell's Senate bill and compared it with Pelosi's House bill. While half of the nation sheltered in place, here's what lawmakers in both parties considered essential spending for the coronavirus recovery. Now, this goes along with something that Brother Otis mentioned, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
$25 million in the Senate bill went to John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. $75 million in the Senate bill funded for corporations for public broadcasting. The author asked the question, why do National Public Radio and Big Bird have to do with coronavirus subsidy? Pelosi's bill allocated $300 million. Now, the Republican bill allocated $75 million. Look at all these earmarks, Richard, that have nothing to do with business, and especially black business. Now, you got the CBC, which is the largest independent body among those legislative bodies, if you know what I mean. You know, maybe I'm saying it wrong, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these earmarks, you can see that these are earmarks towards special interests. Where are their earmarks? You got 52 members in that CBC. Let me continue, because that's something for us to keep in mind. $1.2 billion in Pelosi's bill to require airlines to purchase expensive renewable jet fuel. It was $200 million per year in grants. The Senate bill eliminated this provision. $1.5 billion in Pelosi's bill would have more than doubled the budgets of the Institute of Museums and Library Services and the National Endowments of the Art and Humanities. Pelosi's bill called for $1.5 to them, Richard. The Senate bill provided funding of $200 million. $500 million in Pelosi's bill to the Institute of Library Services. This agency is so small, it doesn't even employ an inspector general. The Senate bill provided $50 million. Pelosi's bill wanted $500 million. $600 million in Pelosi's bill to the National Endowment of Humanities. In 2017, our study showed 80% of all nonprofits grants followed the well-heeled organization with over $1 million in assets. The Senate bill provided $150 million. The Senate stripped many of Pelosi's bill's projects, $25 million bailout of the post office. However, the Senate bill significantly strengthened the private sector unionizing by saying if businesses take a coronavirus stabilization loan, it must remain neutral in any union organizing efforts for the term of the loan. $88 million to the Peace Corps for evacuating volunteers and U.S. direct hires from overseas. The Pelosi bill allocated $90 million. $250 million to the IRS. The Pelosi bill allocated $602 million. $350 million to the State Department for Immigration and Refugee Assistance. The Pelosi bill earmarked $300 million. $400 million to the Federal Election Assistance Commission to assist states with election security. The Pelosi bill provided $4 billion. $30.8 billion to the Department of Education for state and fiscal stabilization. That's what Brother Otis was talking about that Bessie DeVos.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all these earmarks, Richard, that came out of that. Supposed to be $350 billion to bail out businesses. These study what is this stuff I'm reading? All these earmarks. I don't see what the CBC earmarking no money towards black businesses.
They got Claiborne.
Look at this other thing that come from this the Congressional Pig Book, it's called, where you can see all the pork that is in a lot of these bills. The 2019 Congressional Pig Book exposes 282 earmarks in 2019. And it gave some examples. $15 billion. Excuse me, hold it. $65 billion, I'm sorry, for Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery. It's the third year that President Trump's budget recommended eliminating this fund because it favors state or local interests. $13.8 for wild horses and burrow management. $12 million for aquatic plant control program. $9 million for fruit fly quarantine program. And almost $1 million for brown tree snake eradication program. $30 million for the Starbase Youth Program, which is a program where youth go to the National Guard, get exposed to the National Guard, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, and go visit bases across the country. This was something that was earmarked by Amy Klobuchar and then Representative Keith Ellison. That's the first black person I've seen that had any earmark, and his earmark wasn't towards nobody to help anybody of color.
They got Claiborne.
What'd you say?
They got Claiborne to be the oversight.
Yeah, okay. All right, well. listen.
I mean, if you're looking for something, as you're reading, ain't nothing else in it, right? So, I mean, they say, well, look, you know, and.
Let's grab this last call in the minutes we have left. Let's go to 646. 646.
Hey, Ochi. What am I thinking Ochi for? What's going on, Elliot and Richie? Listen, man, could y'all check the volume on TuneIn, man? Because it seems like there's a constant problem with the volume on TuneIn.
Yeah, I'll take care of it, but go ahead. You got something you wanted to mention?
Oh, yeah. Right quick. You were talking about the CBC and these politicians and this whole renewed stimulus package and all of that, man. These people not going to give the American people nothing else, man. They trying to kill people, man, by having them go back to work and all this, man, when they haven't even gotten this whole virus thing, you know, put into the box that it needs to be placed in. It's just amazing how the American people are absolutely falling for it. But it's going to be a lot of people that's going to be hurt by this. You know what I mean?
Well, when you're saying falling for it, I'm not following.
What?
When you're saying falling for it, I'm not following you. Falling for what?
Falling for going back out there to work and stuff of that nature. Falling in regards to going along with a situation to where they don't have the proper testing. They haven't identified really the real cause of this virus and how it's truly being spread. There's just so many more things involved in this thing.
Yeah, but
they're really not looking at.
Yeah, but Jay, the government, and believe me, I'm not trying to advocate what they're doing at all. But the government is not telling them to go back out. The government is basically telling them to stay in. It's the people and the white public that's demanding that they go back out and make money, and some segments of the government.
I disagree. I believe it's the government.
Well, wait a minute. What's going on at these state capitals, where you got people out there with guns and flags? What are they hollering and screaming? Are they hollering and screaming we want to go back out?
That's the public under the auspice of this with Trump and his BS. Talking about we got to open the country back up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's the public saying it. That's what I'm saying. It's the public saying it. And from pressure, some of these states are allowing to pick. For example, Jersey. They still have this thing out of control in Jersey. But the people want to, and I'm talking about white folks, want to, Memorial Day is a big day for them. They want to go back on the beach. So now all of a sudden, he's telling them, well, you can go on the beach. See, they don't want to cause anarchy in their society. And it's to the point now where these people, if you refer to history and look at the Civil War and what happened, these people are on the verge of anarchy. And he's on the verge of not knowing what to do. He knows that if he sends people out, and I'm talking about some of the authorities in their government, if they send people out, it's a danger of this a virus exploding again. But they know that this system, as it is, if it keeps going the way it is, it might be on the verge of total collapse. So a lot of them don't know what to do.
My position is, F them. Let them do whatever they're going to do. I'm keeping my black ass in the home. You know what I mean? That's just the reality, the way that I feel and the way that I see it. But it's just unfortunate that you have a society to where as they won't do the necessary things to save and protect the people, and there's going to be a lot of people that's going to be hurt by it, and you're going to have anarchy regardless if they open up society, let these dumb bastards out, and then these dumb bastards start dropping dead, then you're just going to have another form of anarchy. You know what I mean? Because then you're going to have those same characters really become upset, because now you're going to have to really shut down the country. You're going to really have serious problems in the country. See, if it was me, what I would have done was, I would have done what they did in Denmark. I'd have just gave everybody $2,000 a month. And I would have just said, well, look, we got to shut this down. I would have created a situation where I made sure that people could eat. You understand that people had food. You understand? But let's keep it in, let's stay in the home and do whatever is necessary so that, you know, we can get this in control. But, you know, then again, you got to take into consideration, with that $2,000, it would have went back into population, but now you got a situation where there's no money really going into population, and that's another reason why these states are open up, because they're not getting any sort of income and revenue coming into the state. And that's why New York City, where I live at, is about to catch out. New York City, I tell you, to be honest with you, New York City is going to be in trouble within the next, I would say, 3 to 6 months, because there's no income really being generated in the state. And Lord knows if they have any more of this type of pandemic because of mass transit and things of that nature. So it's a serious, serious crisis that we are facing, that people are not looking at it. But then again, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, they need to kill some of those that they feel are the dead weight of society. And that's just the reality. You know what I'm saying? Because the bottom line is, in a state like New York, you have to have certain businesses open to generate revenue. But the reality is, businesses in New York that generate revenue, like barbershops, salons, restaurants, and things of that nature, will never be the same. So they're not going to be able to generate the revenue. Now, what also you got to look out for is what's going to happen to people's pension. Are they going to be able to go after people's pension in New York State? I don't think they can, because I think there's a law on the books that says that you can't do it. But just imagine, because of the financial crisis that they have, if they decide to repeal that law, you really have a flex of crises going on, because you got people who got serious pensions. You know what I'm saying? In New York State. It's just a lot of things that people are really not looking at and not seeing that's about to come into play and how it's going to be handled. And the tragedy is, you got a dumb bastard in the White House who doesn't have a clear understanding on how to deal with it and address it. And you got people like in the CBC who are not thought thinkers. And you got people like McConnell, who's basically not going to do anything to help people. And then you got the others, who Little Joe was talking about, like the squad, that are truly really not visionaries and don't really have no power to, you know, implement anything. So the crises that the country is facing is much deeper than what we realize, because of the total economics of it and the unwillingness to say, okay, let's take care of the people and let's put this thing in check. And if we can put this thing in check, then we can open this thing back up again. And what you call it? Because remember this, there's no guarantee that there's going to be any type of, you know, place, any type of thing in place to address this violence in regards to a vaccination. There's no guarantee of that. So, I mean, one would think, and let's be honest, that come December, January, February of next year, this pandemic is going to come back. And Lord knows what's going to happen if it comes back. Because it can't come back not worse than it already is right now. And then imagine having to shut things down again. Ah, man, the country would be in absolutely, absolutely devastating condition. And especially when you got somebody like Fredo that doesn't have the wherewithal, the mental temperament, nor the real understanding on how to deal with a crisis like this. He'll lose his effing mind if this came back and it had to be a situation to shut down the country, because the one thing that they're not doing and nobody wants to deal with and address is they're not setting things up to be able to handle it if it comes back in December, January, February, or March. And nobody wants to be honest about it. So we're in trouble, bro. We really in trouble. You know what I mean? And we don't, and I don't think we have the leadership to be honest with you and our community to even articulate it. And that's the tragedy. So, hey, my position is I'm staying in my house. I can afford it. I mean, I'm cool. I have no problem with it. But I know people like you, Brother Elliot, who have a business that you enjoy and things of that nature. You know, it's definitely, you know, an inconvenience to you. You know, because I know you would like to be in your shop, you know, with the people and doing that. But the reality is, I mean, do you place yourself in the position to where you may catch this virus and not make it? Or do you just deal? Do you just say, okay, I'm retired? I mean, these are the things that people are facing. And sad thing is, you got a lot of people right now who are going hungry that ain't even really being talked about. You got people who, let's say, this whole thing plays itself out, you know, come September, October, you know, they got all that back rent money and all of that. And then, you know, these people are going to start coming after them to get their money. And then, okay, let's say this pandemic comes back in place again, December and January, February and March, and they got to shut things down. Now what happens? So, I mean, this is a crisis that's real. That's the real deal. And I'm telling you this from a perspective of a landlord. I mean, you know, the only thing, I'm being honest with you, that's keeping me in a positive, slow position is I got Section 8. And I ain't getting mad at no tenant of mine that can't give me their balance. I just say to them one thing, give me something. And you know what the funny thing is? Every one of my tenants has, except for maybe two, has given me something. And I'm like, cool, because I know what I'm receiving from Section 8, my mortgage is straight. You know what I mean? Our expenses are straight. So, I mean, I'm cool. I can live with it. I mean, you know, hey, what am I not getting in my pocket? Maybe $1,000 or $2? I ain't worried about that, bro. That don't even mean nothing to me. But I can say this, my tenants got, you know, hot water, and when the time comes for heat, they're going to have heat, and that's it. Now, whatever else they do from that period of time, I can, you know, what can I do? But I know I got one or two tenants that having issues with food, and, you know, I'm like, hey, man, you know, listen, here goes something. You know what I mean? Because they got young kids. And that's what I care about. I care about the young kids. I don't, you know what I mean? So it's a situation that I'm saying to myself, this thing may be back at my doorstep come December, January, February of next year. Now, that's the time when it's going to be cold out there. Thank goodness I'll be in a position where I could, you know, provide them with heat. You know what I mean? It ain't. That's what's important to me. But everybody's not thinking like that, because I got friends of mine that have properties, and they hit it in Harlem. You know what I mean? I just laugh. You know what I mean? Because I said to you, and I told you all earlier, look, stop trying to get all the money you can and get that secure money from Section 8. And they didn't want to listen. And now, you know, you got a couple of them that ain't even getting no money. You know what I mean? And they can't take the tenant to court to get rid of them. And then I'm trying to explain to them, come, you know, October, November, when you can maybe take them to court to see what you can do. The court ain't going to put all of these people out in the street. They going to negotiate the deal. Okay, and now let's say you're going to have to maybe get a decent lump sum, and then they're going to maybe be in the position where they'll say, well, we're going to add $300 or $400 to your rent, and then what's going to happen maybe 3 or 4 months later, the pandemic comes back, and they're going to shut it down again. So, I mean, it's a lot of things at play, man, that people don't understand. And the thing that's upsetting me the most is we don't have leadership. If we had the right type of leadership, and I don't think it's Joe Biden, I'm going to be upfront, I don't think it's Joe Biden, but I will say this. He may be a little bit better than Fredo, because Fredo's really a disaster, because he's like that individual chasing money. And I've always known when you chase money, you don't get money. You make too many dumb mistakes to prevent you from getting the type of money that you're chasing. And this is where we at in this country, you know. So I don't know. I don't know what to say, you know. And I'm being honest with you. This whole corona thing, to be honest, is a stressful thing, man. I'm like at the point I'm sick of hearing about it. I'm like, I ain't even gonna lie to you. I just need a mental break from it, totally, because it's too much. Especially when you're dealing with people that you know and that you care about, you see a suffering. You know what I mean? Anytime I'm hearing about a young kid gotta go out twice a day to a school to get something to eat, man, and their parents really can't feed them the way that they were a month or two able to, That breaks my heart, man. That disturbs me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't have no problem going in my pocket and saying here, or going to buy some food and giving it to them, because listen, every Thanksgiving and Christmas, I give my tenants a bag of food. So I don't have no problems with it. But it's just the reality that there's a lot of people going through this, and you got a lot of people who don't give a damn about their people. And that's what we're facing, and nobody's really addressing it, and it's stressful. I'm not even gonna lie to you and tell you it's really stressful, because the sad thing is, in our community, a lot of our people don't have compassion for one another. We forget about compassion for one another. It's all about the dollar, and when things are as tight as it is right now, I mean, you see it get even worse. And I'll leave you with this. I know a couple of women, you know, from when I was a chauffeur, that are cream girls. They having a hard time making money now. So you know it's bad. If they having a hard time getting paid.
Yeah, well.
it's real. You know what I mean? We don't even understand in our community what's going on. And think about this also. The churches, the other institutions and organizations. Do you know how many churches are probably going to face foreclosure when this thing is all said and done? Hey, man, a lot of things come July, August, and September of this year is going to come to the light that's going to bug people out, because you're going to see what the crisis is. Because I can tell you now, as a landlord, I know the moratorium is going to be lifted, say, around in the July, August, and landlords going to be flooding the court trying to get their money owed from the tenants, trying to kick them out and stuff like that. And my perspective is this. The courts are going to tell the tenants to give the landlord something to work out a deal, and then what they'll do is they'll say, well, you got to add an extra maybe $300-$400 onto your rent until you pay off your debt, and people are not going to be able to do it. And you can't, and you already got a hell of a homeless population in New York. It's going to be, I'm telling you, watch. We'll have the conversation 4 or 5 months from now, and you're going to see the crisis is going to be bad. You know what I mean? And I was thinking about, you know, trying to maybe get one or two more buildings, but the more I think about it, it ain't even really worth it, man. I ain't even going to do it. I'm just like I told my partner, we just going to deal with what we have right now and just ride it out. You know what I mean? And thank goodness I got a partner that has an understanding that we are on the same page. Because believe me, I know guys that have deals, have buildings, they ain't on the same page with one another, and it's causing problems between them. So, I don't know, man. I hope we figure it out as a community and do something, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities, but there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be hurting, Elliot and Richard. And I don't even, and the sad thing is we don't have the type of solutions in place to help them. We don't have the type of politicians in place. We don't have really the type of infrastructure in place. And, you know, it's going to be hurting. Because whenever you got an institution like the church crying and complaining, you know it's real. So we'll see. But listen, you got a guest on Sunday?
Yeah, we'll have somebody.
Well, listen, man, I'm glad that you decided to come in to work tonight with your sidekick, Richard, you know what I mean? So I can see you wasn't sitting home eating ice cream. Thank you very much. Because I know the people are enjoying you being on. And hey, people, let's think about some solutions on how we can help one another and place ourselves in a situation to survive this continuous crisis. Because believe me, it's not going to end like we think it is. I'm predicting it's not going to get better. It's probably going to get worse when it's all said and done. So have a good night. I look forward to Sunday. And Wicked, how are you enjoying not having to deal with the daddy?
I don't know about all that, but okay.
Oh, you still gotta go in to the daddy's house?
No, but you know, the long hand is always there.
Well, hey, listen, man. I'll tell you this right quick. I had a conversation with my nephew last night, and I was telling him, because he's an IT guy and he's working from home, and I was saying to him, look, man, you may have to talk to your employee when they say to you that we may want you to come back to work in the office. I said to him, look, man, y'all doing such a good job. Everything is running smoothly. You may have to say to him, look, I'll take a 20% cut if I can work from home. Because I think you all may have heard, Facebook is telling their people they don't have to come back into the office no more. They can work from home. So imagine, and it's like he didn't get it at first, but I tried to explain to him, you take that 20% cut, you hold on to your job, you know, think about how much money you're going to save on not spending for lunch and transportation, and you also placing yourself in a less dangerous position because you're hitting on mass transit from Jersey going into New York. And that's just a small thing, you know? So, I mean, we're going to have to start thinking outside the box. and doing a lot of things to protect ourselves from whatever this crisis may be. So, hey, man, everybody out there, have them type of thoughts in your mind. Build up your immune system, you know, try to save your money, and just try to be as safe as you can, man, so that you won't be in a position to catch this thing. Put me on hold, Richard and Elliot. Enjoy the weekend, good people.
Talk to you. Richard, the before we wind up tonight, let me did you see that that article about the Green Beret? They got caught down there in Venezuela.
I know not anything specific. I just heard what was
you heard about. Well, I know you heard about
them.
They got some published reports. I was looking at the one in the Daily Mail. Let me read a couple paragraphs, get your thoughts. It says, American mercenary, the title of it, American mercenary detained in Venezuela was misled to thinking that the administration backed the failed coup and was told Maduro would be extracted by DEA helicopters, his friends claim. It says, family and friends of former Green Beret, Luke Deadman, believe he was misled into taking part into the failed coup in Venezuela on May 4th. The ex-soldier thought the coup was supported by the U.S. government and Donald Trump. He messaged at one point or another that he had gotten the green light from the government, one friend claims. The claim comes a week after it was revealed that the DEA and the Department of Homeland Security knew about training camps in Colombia. Denman, 34, was arrested and charged with conspiracy and terrorism last week. Fellow American Arian Berry, 41, was also charged. The U.S. government and President Trump denied any direct involvement. Now, I mentioned here, Deadman was arrested on May 4th alongside fellow Green Beret, again, Arian Berry, and a dozen Venezuelans for their failed coup attempt to overthrow President Maduro. President Donald Trump and the U.S. government denied any direct involvement in the botched raid, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that every tool will be used to secure the release of the Americans involved. Richard, you remember the old show Mission Impossible that used to come on?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when Jim would get the message, the missions in the beginning,
says,
I remember those famous words, if any of your members of your team or caught or captured, the secretary would disavow any knowledge of your actions. Good luck, Jim. That's what they would say to him. So here we go again. Now who believes that this guy acted on his own? They already admitted that the United States government knew about, it says here, the claims of 1 week after was revealed that the DEA and the Department of Homeland Security knew about training camps in Colombia. What do you think they were doing? Training for a soccer team? Training to play baseball?
And if I heard you right, he said, now they're just saying it was a false word, that he got it, that it was a green light by the government for him to do it.
Well, you think that guy is good. Listen, this guy, he's a mercenary. He's a former Green Beret. That's not like he was a bosun's mate in the Navy or some type of clerk in the service. He was in one of their top echelon branches of the defense. And he was a mercenary. So he had been doing this in other countries. Who knows who else he has done this to or killed or whatever. So when he went down there, he knew what he was doing. And he was acting on, listen, they already put a bounty out. This government put a bounty out on the man, $15 million. You remember that? That was in the published report.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden the guy gets caught and he's telling the United States, hey, listen, get me out of this.
But it's
now the U.S. government, now they keep talking about Trump. Listen, it don't matter whether it was Trump, Obama, Bush, the first Bush, Clinton, they've all done this. They've all sent these people in there to murder heads of state of other governments. So when it says here that Trump denied it, but Pompeo said that they're going to do all they can to get the guy out of there, well, they put him in that situation. Sure, he wanted the money. But I didn't know whether you had saw that.
I didn't see that particular one, but, you know, and what only comes to my mind, and you, just in you reading that report, was the point that now you done had two. I think that this is in the same 4 year or whatever it is, 4 year period, right? Because the botched up job of going into Haiti, right? That was mercenaries, right? That went into Haiti and they got caught, right? Now you got another group going into Venezuela and they get caught just like the Bay of Pigs, right? Going into Cuba under Kennedy, who was somewhat kind of the same kind of thing, right? The Kennedy, you know, the suave, you know, son of a gangster and, you know, all of that. But when you look at Obama, they go into you have to put in the middle, right? You have to put in the middle. They get the general and they lied to him, right? They straight up lied and said, everything was cool if I got this right. And then they sent a thing to knock him out, the general from Iran. But he was under the understanding that everything was cool by Trump. But Obama, when they went in to get, and they sent the dog. Who did they kid? They sent the dog and killed the head of one of the Muslim.
Yeah, I forgot his name. Yeah, but they did send a dog in there.
Right, and not only did they get out, but the dog got out. And that was a country that was protecting. I mean, in this case, you know, but just so. I think
the dog received the Medal of Honor, didn't he?
Huh? Yeah.
I guess he's going to show it to his family.
You know, but I'm just showing. Stop.
Great. You know,
but the thing coming back to us, you know, we as even in this here crisis that we're in, this is what's going on to reshuffle the deck, right? And we're it's being done. And you just, the no-knock thing, you know, Jay just got finished talking about, the things getting worse. Well, what happens? And, you know, what happens when people are really upset of saying, well, I don't support these kind of foreign policy actions and I don't support being under this condition. And they're going to, these white boys is running around here with AK-47. I mean, they're going into state buildings. They walking into supermarkets with high-powered rifles. And they're showing us they're doing training. They ain't got to go to Columbia to do no training. They can do the training right here from what I'm seeing, the little I see. And, you know, I don't watch television at all. But I'm seeing these people like what... They got rocket launchers. Where are they getting these kind of equipment from? Private citizens. And they're saying they're just training. But a Negro, they ain't even got a gun. And they are a threat and getting killed. You know.
I hear you. Yeah, well, the struggle continues. That's all I can say, Richard.
Hey.
Be looking forward to Sunday's program. I want to thank everybody for being with us this evening. lively discussion. As always, and we'll be back. Oh, no, we won't. Wait a minute. Oh, let me get this thing straight here. I'm getting ready to do something twisted here. You know what? Before we do that, let me looking forward to Black Reality Think Tank tomorrow. That comes on tomorrow, Saturday, 4 to 6 on Time for An Awakening Media. Black Reality Think Tank with the two sisters and I know they're going to hang me, but their name escapes me. But Dr. Rogers will be one of the hosts, but the two sisters basically host the program. He kind of facilitates it for him. They had an interesting discussion last week, Richard. I know you didn't catch it. It was they were talking about domestic violence. Interesting, because I think it's been off the hook up there in Milwaukee, where one of the sisters is located. And they were talking about some of the stress and pressure going on, similar to what Jay was talking about with some of our people up there, you know, being at the sheltered in place, things are going on in the homes that don't need to be going on. And they were talking about it from a female perspective. Interesting dialogue. They'll be on tomorrow. Again, 4 to 6 on Time for An Awakening Media. Check it out. That's Saturday afternoon, 4 to 6 on Time for An Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. save the children.